Good morning, Connecticut, to our friends across the Sound, and happy Easter to everyone who's celebrating today. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This year, Jersey Mike's Sub Shops are joining forces with more than 180 local charities for the company's sixth annual March Month of Giving, which is culminating with Jersey Mike's Day of Giving this Wednesday, March 30th, when 100% of the day's sales, every single dollar, is donated to your favorite Jersey Mike's local partnering charity. So we're going to open giving you all the details on how to get involved while enjoying a great sub for a great cause. Then we'll introduce you to one of Connecticut's youngest philanthropists, Ishan Patel, founder of Planting Pencils, which has been working in the state and around the globe collecting educational materials for needy schools. Next weekend, Syracuse University is honoring Planting Pencils as its benefit charity for the annual Whitman Graduate Student Organization. So this weekend, we'll let Ishan and his mom, Dr. Alba Patel, tell you all about it. Then we'll spend the second half of the show bringing you the first of a two-part series coming up from Connecticut's Northeast Organic Farming Association Winter Conference, which happened recently at WestCon. We'll meet CT NOFA's new director and hear from just a couple of the partner organizations participating and educating attendees about products, services, and trends tied to organic gardening and farming. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this news. Acts 4 Ministry in Waterbury recently partnered with the Ungroup Society to serve young women in need by collecting prom dresses and accessories for their second annual prom dress giveaway. Up until Friday, April 15th, the organizations will welcome donations of dresses, evening separates, shoes, and accessories. They're also seeking either the direct professional services of hairdressers and nail technicians or gift cards for the young ladies to receive these services. Donations can be brought to Acts 4 Ministry at 1713 Thomaston Avenue in Waterbury, Monday through Saturdays from 9 to 3. For details, you can visit acts4.org. That's ACTS4.org. All right. Well, when last we had a visit with Troy Davidson, we were talking about Jersey Mike's and the great work that they were doing, raising money for Connecticut Special Olympics with the opening of their Derby store. That was almost a year ago. And Troy is back now to talk about something even more exciting coming up on this Wednesday, March 30th. 100% of the day's sales, every single dollar that's spent at Jersey Mike's is going to be donated to their local partner charities. Here in Connecticut, there are a multitude of schools and other organizations that are going to be the beneficiaries that we're going to talk about. But we want you to start getting hungry this Sunday morning and save it all up for March 30th. And we want you to bring your family and your friends, neighbors, coworkers, everybody you can with you, or tell them all about the Jersey Mike's giveaway day. It's all part of their month of giving to help 180 plus charities throughout the region. So, Troy, thanks for joining us again, and thanks to Jersey Mike's for this great philanthropy. First of all, before we kind of concentrate on this Day of Giving event, let's talk a little bit about the roll up to the month of giving and what that's all about.
That's right. We're very excited about the opportunity to support our local communities. It truly is one of the highlights of our year, other than a new store opening where we also include our philanthropic opportunities to local charities. This Day of Giving is an opportunity for us throughout the Jersey Mike system to give back 100% of the sales and dollars brought in on that day to local organizations. And this year, we'll be focusing on our local school systems around each restaurant that we have, particularly here in Connecticut, but throughout the country, school systems are our focus of charitable donations to support efforts and wherever they decide they'd like to best use those funds.
So how did the month of giving work? It just provided folks an opportunity to make donations versus the Day of Giving, where it's actually Jersey Mike's turn to feed the world and give the proceeds back to great causes.
That's right. This month we're focused on the schools, and as folks come in, they have the opportunity to make a donation over and above anything they may purchase in one of our restaurants. But on that day, you simply order lunch, and everything you spend will go to the local school system.
Excellent. So what's the what are the time constraints or other rules of the game to ensure that folks are going to the right place at the right time to maximize that give back to these local charities on Wednesday, March 30th?
So we open at 10 a.m. On Wednesday, March 30th, and we'll be open till 9 p.m. in all of our locations. And we will. There are no restrictions. Anytime, all day long, any amount purchased can be eat in, dine in, or carry out. Could be call ahead, online ordering. All sales coming through the restaurant that day will be donated.
Excellent. So for folks that want more information, we'll start telling you. You can go to jerseymikes.com and look for the prompt to the month of giving and the day of giving promotion. Jerseymikes.com is the place to go also to peruse all the other great information about all the tasty products that they offer at the Jersey Mikes, wherever you might be listening. So this year, 2016, represents the sixth annual March month of giving, and while the plan each year is to always do better, I mean congratulations to you folks. $3 million raised last year with 150 different charities being the beneficiary, this year with 180 plus out there, 180 plus charities who are set up for as recipients. Do you have actually a dollar goal that you're hoping to exceed for 2016, Troy?
We do. We'd like to see $4 million this year. We've not only growing the event in existing locations, but of course we've added close to 200 stores across the country throughout the course of the last year since last March. So we think this is a very realistic target as folks continue to become more excited about the opportunity to give back and have lunch at the same time.
That's excellent. So you're going to you want to increase the donations by 25% while at the same time as you just mentioned, Jersey Mike's has almost doubled in size in the past 3 years. So there's plenty more opportunity, and I don't doubt that you'll meet or exceed your new goals. So that's fantastic. Let's just let people know, no matter where they are, how schools in their region are benefiting all of the charities in Connecticut will be getting a piece of that March 30th give back campaign from Jersey Mike's, as well as a piece of donations being made at stores throughout Connecticut. So Brookfield and Danbury High Schools are beneficiaries, as are Derby High and Ansonia High School. They don't just enjoy the fantastic competitions on the playing fields, but also are part of this fantastic giving campaign from Jersey Mike's. Ludlow High School is on board. Meriden Public Schools, Montville, and Norwich Public Schools. Hello, Norwich, way out east. Ridgefield High School, Wilton High School, as well as the Weston High School Booster Club are all on board. Norwalk's Citywide PTO are recipients of the Jersey Mike's philanthropy, as is another organization that is really near and dear to our hearts here at our radio stations, and a little bit of a departure from the education arena. It's the Take a Vet Fishing Initiative in both Hartford and New Haven, which really does so much for our vets. So let's talk a little bit, Troy, in the few minutes that we have left with you, about some of the ways the organizations are actually spending the money that people are not only donating throughout the month of March and the month of giving, but which will also get a big boost out of the day of giving on March 30th.
Well, last year we supported the Connecticut Special Olympics and raised over $10,000 for them through the couple openings that we had. They used those funds to send athletes to various competitions. As we've referenced, this year will be, for the month of giving, will be focused on the school systems and the schools that you just listed. And the funds are, there's no strings tied, no nothing attached. They use it however they deem necessary, whether that's for new sporting equipment, educational tools such as computers or or whatever the system needs sees as most valuable to furthering the educational cause for their local district.
Mm-hmm. So doing some example math, so say you hit that $4 million raised, which is the 2016 goal, right on the button, and you have across the network 400 educational recipients. Does it work in a way that you equally divide up the donated amount amongst all of those recipients equally, or is there some differentiation based on the size or scope of the programming for the participating recipients?
So it would be tied to the local restaurant and what they raise for the local school. For instance, you mentioned Brookfield and Danbury High School.
Mm-hmm.
So the funds that would be raised in our Brookfield Jersey Mike's location, all of those funds would be, so if that location were to raise all $4 million, then it would all go to Brookfield and Danbury High School.
Okay. So the Fairfield store, we should let people know, is the place to go if you want to support Ludlow, Meriden, a store for Meriden Public Schools, the Montville store for the Montville Public Schools, and then Norwich, Ridgefield, Wilton, Norwalk, and Weston, and so forth. So you just need to go to jerseymikes.com, find the Jersey Mike's in your area, and man, if you're not already a patron, they've got incredible sandwiches, great food. I've been a patron for many, many years, so I can speak to it myself, as I know Troy Davidson can. Troy is the area director for Jersey Mike's here on the air this morning, talking about the month of giving. This is the sixth annual month of giving for Jersey Mike's, and once again reminding folks that on Wednesday, March 30th, from opening to closing, bring everybody you know to Jersey Mike's. Load up breakfast, lunch, and dinner if you can, because as you heard, the proceeds are going through a number of local school systems, as well as in the Hartford and New Haven markets, the Take a Vet Fishing campaign. So, Troy, anything else you want folks to know going forward? Any other things going on later in the year, or anything else they need to know about the great work that you're doing and Jersey Mike's is doing to help raise funds for the school systems and the vets?
We're just very excited to have the opportunity to share it with all the listeners, and I look forward to a great and impactful day that day for all of our school systems, which we are supporting.
Excellent. Well, I will be visiting my local Jersey Mike's on Wednesday, March 30th, and I hope all the folks that are listening have an opportunity to do that, too. As you heard, you can do the takeout, eat in, order online, by phone, any way you slice it. It's coming up great for our schools and veterans, thanks to Jersey Mike's and their sixth annual month of giving and their very special day of giving, Wednesday, March 30th. Troy Davidson is the area director for Jersey Mike's. We hope to talk to you again soon about other great stuff that you and Jersey Mike's are doing here in our communities. Thank you so much, Troy, for being part of the program. Well, we're so happy to be in Southington. Invited guests of a very special family and a very special young man. This Connecticut 13-year-old had a desire and has a desire to help children around the world with a newly created charity called Planting Pencils. You might have heard about him or seen him. He's been written about in the press and TV. On TV, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is.
Planting Pencils. So founder Ishan Patel, here by my side, hopes to provide the tools needed for underserved students to receive a proper education. Ishan is here, of course, in his own home today. I am his guest. And his mom is with us, too, Dr. Alba Patel, who has helped her son start this nonprofit. So first of all, Ishan, just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am in eighth grade at Kingswood Oxford, in West Hartford, and I live here in Southington.
What do you do when you're not planting pencils?
Well, I like to play lacrosse and golf.
Oh, cool.
Along with squash. And I like to play piano and the drums too. So.
Awesome. So what of all of the things you could have done to be philanthropic, to help other people, What came first, the idea or the name Planting Pencils?
Probably the idea, just to make sure that every child in the world has access to at least basic education. Because you can just simply give water and food to people, but if you provide them with education, they can eventually become self-sufficient and provide food and water for themselves and other people.
So all the young people in the world is a pretty tall order. How do you start on a journey so far?
Well, I have been working on starting mainly in Connecticut and like in the Hartford area with schools. We so far donated to Trinity Academy in Hartford, mm-hmm. And Covenant Prep in Hartford. And then we are working on expanding to the rest of the world. So we've also donated to a school in Ghana, along with a school in Tanzania.
Okay, so it's really from home to around the globe already.
Yep.
And now you just need to connect the dots with a lot more pencils.
Yeah.
So your aunt was played a little bit of an important role in all this?
Yeah, so she went to Costa Rica and India about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. to volunteer at impoverished schools. And the schools basically were just a chalkboard on a wall, and mm-hmm. the kids sat on the dirt ground,
yeah.
With only one teacher for many, many kids.
Yeah, you saw pictures. I think people don't have an idea that, they're driving by six or eight kids sitting on the side of a busy road with some woman standing there drawing on the wall, and that's actually their school.
Yeah, it's when I first saw these pictures that she took while she was in Costa Rica and India, I was really surprised, because if you look at what we have here, we have many big schools that are established with all new technology, like advanced computers and smart boards that are used for education now.
Yeah, even schools, I guess, in what you might think of as kind of less lower advantage neighborhoods still have a lot of technology.
Yeah, they still have a lot more than what you see that other people, like in Africa, have.
So you got the idea that even giving them something as simple as a pencil, it's 100% more than they had before.
Yeah, because a pencil is basically what you think of when you first think of education. You always think of a pencil and like a notebook. And with those, you can do so many things, like write. You can use your imagination and your creativity to do so many things.
So have you gone to visit and see the children, at least here in Connecticut, who are now using some of the donations you were able to facilitate?
Well, when we went to Covenant Prep and Trinity. We went to those schools and actually physically delivered it directly to them. So we were able to see both of those schools. And we are working on trying to go to the school in Tanzania and Ghana, and even the school in India that my aunt went to,
yeah.
to try to see what's going on there.
And so is the idea to kind of go and scope it out first and see what they need and get it, or do you plan to try to take some stuff with you?
Maybe take some stuff that they can begin with and then see what else they really need.
Excellent.
Like computers, because they don't have any internet access or computers or anything. And that's a big thing in the world today,
mm-hmm.
because everybody... most people here in the U.S. have technology education, and soon everyone in the world is going to need to know how to use technology. And if they don't have technology now to learn with, then they'll be at a big disadvantage later on.
Well, I think the other thing that's cool is, having met your parents, is that they're raising you right, in that, you know, they've been able to enjoy success and advantages, but the fact that you see that as a means to give to people that don't have it, to bring everybody a little bit closer together, is pretty interesting for a young man.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's really helping a lot, because we need education so people can become self-sufficient and provide themselves.
Great. Well, we're going to give you a little bit of a break, and we're going to talk to your mom. Dr. Alba Patel is sitting here beside me as well. And so Alba, was this your sister?
Yes, that's
so,
my sister.
So was this her first foray out into disadvantaged parts of the globe, or is she sort of been doing that for a while?
No, actually, her first trip was in Jaipur, India, and she spent 6 weeks there at the school. And I think when she was able to see how much they were able to do for the kids and how much they needed, then she took another trip to Costa Rica like 6 months later.
Yeah, real eye opener.
Yes,
but I imagine it's really challenging in that they have nothing,
right?
Because then you don't really know what to do.
Right.
You don't know what the right way of starting is.
Right, exactly. And, even those kids in India, my sister went, a couple of years back, but we've actually contacted the person who runs the school there. Mm-hmm. And with the help of donations over the last couple of years, he's been able to expand the school now. So it's a primary and secondary school. Mm-hmm. They're able to accept more students. They actually have desks now for the students and a much bigger building with actual classrooms. They've got clean water for the kids to drink and to wash with. They've got uniforms for the kids. Before, the kids basically were barefoot on the ground. Mm. And now these kids are doing phenomenal. Like, some of the kids that she had reached a couple of years ago were just learning basic math, basic ABCs, basic spelling. Now they can read and write in both English and Hindi. They've learned math all the way up to algebra. They're taking science and social studies. So these kids who used to live basically in a tent made out of a garbage bag, now their lives are going to be completely different, because they can go out and get a job and they can provide for themselves and their families.
The other thing, the planting pencils. By the way, folks, if you're just joining us, we're the guests of the Patel family in Southington. Their son Ishban has started a charity called Planting Pencils. If you want to learn more about it and see some pictures and find out how you might be able to help, you can go to plantingpencils.org. But his mom, Dr. Alba Patel, went looking for some stats to see how bad the need really is. And it's kind of shocking, as your son pointed out, there is likely significant resources to bring food and water, maybe even clothing.
Right.
But when it comes to education,
seem
to forget it.
Right. We found out that only 2% of humanitarian aid actually goes to education. 98% is for food, water, the basic supplies, digging wells, etc. Mm. Now, at some point in the future, Ishan's ultimate goal is to open a school where they have no access to a school. Mm. And not just open a school. He wants to provide them with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, clean water to drink, clean water to wash with, because these kids, a lot of times, are either put early on in their years into the workforce to help their families supply. Mm. They don't want to send their kids to school. Some of them are also married off at a very young age instead of sending them to school. We figure if we provide the food and the water, that puts less of a strain on the family, and the families will be more incentivized to send their kids to school and to get an education.
Sadly, it becomes a trade for service almost.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, we've tried to take all of that into consideration to do the most that we can to try to get these kids in school. So it's not about, just giving them supplies and just opening a school. We have to take care of some of their basic needs as well to help them, because if they're malnourished, if they're hungry, they're not going to be able to learn anyway. Exactly.
Yeah,
so if they're
healthy, wrapping,
putting
everything around them.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, let's talk to Ishan about what's going on so far. We've heard the good that Planting Pencils has done, but you also obviously need financial support. Tell us a little bit about some of the great fundraising success you've had so far, Ishan.
So far, we raised $500 at a Zumba event just from that event in Southington, and that was actually in February. We also collected enough supplies to make our first donations to two of the Hartford schools that I mentioned before on March 2nd.
And there's something about Syracuse, I heard.
I guess the word has spread nationally.
It's gone viral, my friend.
And now Syracuse University has actually chosen Planting Pencils as its benefit charity for their annual Whitman Graduate Student Organization Weekend, and that's April 1st to 3rd. So they are putting collection bins around campus all semester, and I'm going to address the participants of that and serve as a guest judge for a competition that they are holding.
All right. When you're done, don't let them talk you into going to the pub. No pub yet. That time will come. They'll be celebrating you for many years to come if Planting Pencils takes off. Maybe you'll be the next Save the Children. That would be awesome. Two great Connecticut children's charities, Save the Children and Planting Pencils, both good friends of ours at the award-winning For the People. So last couple of questions now. You've heard the story. You've heard the great work that's being done already, and this dream of actually creating a school and community sustaining network to ensure the best success for the beneficiaries of Planting Pencils abroad. So, Dr. Patel, tell folks how they can help.
Well, anybody who has supplies that would like to donate, we've set up collection boxes at the Reboot Computer store in Bristol, as well as the Staples in West Hartford. And they can also come to our medical office, which is 710 Main Street in Plantsville, to drop off supplies. Mm-hmm. If they are further away, somewhere in Connecticut, they can contact us via the website, and we can come pick up the donations. You could also go straight to the website and make monetary donations on the website. And once you go on there, there's also a blog, which Ishan has been writing various stories about young activists around the world who, with education, they're able to now help other children. So he's been kind of trying to talk about a different young advocate around the world on a weekly basis to let people know that, you know, there are others out there that are trying to do the same kind of good he's trying to do.
Well, I think it would be awesome if every single school in Connecticut devoted one class to raising donations or the physical pencils and other items needed here for Planting Pencils. So I'll put the challenge out on behalf of Planting Pencils. I'm so honored to meet the Patel family and be welcomed into their home here in Southington. Planting Pencils founder Ishan Patel is, as you heard, hoping to provide the tools needed for underserved students to receive a proper education. Not just here in Connecticut, not just across the many needy neighborhoods and communities here in the United States, but around the world. And it all started here. So in a few years, when Ishan is on 60 Minutes and ABC Evening News, and they're talking to him about his donation of his first $1 million, you could say, oh, I heard about him on the award-winning For the People. Ishan, great to meet you. Thanks. You so much. Bye. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People live from the Northeast Organic Farming Association Winter Conference at WestCon right after this news. Griffin Hospital offers free education, advice, and support to help individuals prepare to quit smoking with its four-week smoking cessation program called That's It, Learn to Quit. That's It, Learn to Quit teaches a variety of methods to help individuals quit smoking. The program consists of Wednesday night meetings from 5:30 to 7 p.m. between March 30th and April 20th at the Center for Cancer Care at Griffin Hospital in Derby. Register for That's It, Learn to Quit. by calling 203-732-1476 or click on griffinhealth.org.
All right, stepping outside Western Connecticut State University for just a moment to enjoy the near spring air. We'll be springing forward this weekend and losing an hour of sleep tonight, but that hasn't stopped our first guest, Jeff Kordelak. He's Executive Director of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association here in Connecticut, a group that has been a staple guest on our award-winning For the People for all the 27 years I've been doing the show, and this is probably around the 15th NOFA program that we're dedicating the entire show to from one of their conferences. So, Jeff, great to meet you and see you, and great to add you to the roster of NOFA leadership that has graced our airwaves all these years. Quickly, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the organization.
Thank you, John. It's a really beautiful day here in Danbury for our 34th winter conference. It's so exciting to see. It looks like about 800 people rolling through the doors today. And I'm so pleased to be a part of this event. I've visited many times over the years to get my garden inspiration and find new vendors. And now I'm thrilled to be involved with the NOFA leadership here in Connecticut.
So what's your background? Did you come from a family farm, or did you just start getting an inkling for agriculture or growing stuff as a young person?
Yeah, it was definitely the influence of my parents and my teachers. You know, I was growing up in Darien, and I went to Hindley School, and they had a famous farm, a little farm area that the older kids in the school would take care of. That was an inspiration, and so were all the gardens that we grew over the years and the canning that we did. But I studied natural resources management, and over the years, I've realized that farming and the production of food are very huge parts of the solution to having a more sustainable globe. And so I've decided to dedicate my work to conservation in the farming angle.
Excellent. Well, as a two-time Connecticut Agricultural Journalist of the Year myself, I realize how critically important that is and how important your role and the role of NOFA is for that in Connecticut. A lot of folk, virtually everyone that hears the program is going to be hearing about it after the fact. So what we really want to talk about in the last few minutes that we have with you are all of the opportunities that NOFA has for folks, whether they're just small, casual, we won't get back in, I don't think, here, I'll put my foot in there. You know, what they have for like small, casual, local growers, all the way up to the largest farms, and not just farming, but also for landscapers and others that are doing more aesthetic natural improvements on people's property too, right?
You bet. You know, Connecticut NOFA was started by organic farming enthusiasts and advocates, and we've grown to support farmers, gardeners. We excite foodies, the consumers, and we also do a few trainings each year to train landscapers to go organic. Organiclandcare.net is our website, which is all about becoming accredited as an organic landscaper or land care professional. And with that tied with our farming programs, we have a lot to offer. So people should check out our website for the events calendar. Surely you'll find something like the backyard homesteading workshop coming up in mid-May, or maybe something about our soil carbon coming up on May 5th. And we're doing several other events, including Will Bonzel is coming on April 4th to the Hartford area. And we're very excited to co-sponsor that with the Bionutrient Dense chapter up there in that area.
Okay.
So that's an exciting event on April 4th. Up in the Hartford area with Will Bonzel, a famous, well-known vegetable gardener, seed saver, homesteader of all kinds.
Yeah. Excellent. Before we go, just the other thing that I really like to celebrate with NOFA is the ability that you guys have to facilitate bringing people out onto Connecticut farms. You have events at farms where people can sample the food and the bounty of the farm. They can talk to the farmers, get some tips and ideas. Tell us a little bit about
that's
that.
The devil.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about that as they keep pouring in with compliments to the NOFA conference here. So bringing people out to the farm, NOFA has a few events that are, talk about bringing hundreds. Sometimes you guys draw really big crowds out to local farms.
Well, we can. Many of our programs on farms are workshops, so they're, you know, a dozen, two, three, four dozen people that are there to learn a certain topic, like cover cropping, but we celebrate farms too. So we're looking forward to hosting an organic harvest jamboree this fall up in the Washington area, where we'll have music and exciting things for, you know, kids and good times and farm tours and to really see what the farm's all about and maybe even pick a fresh tomato too. So, like I said, keep an eye on the ConnecticutNOFA.org events calendar, and you guys can find something fun to do, whether it's a special tasting of an Arc of Taste food, or it's a workshop on how to do better backyard gardening, or maybe something about, you know, canning or another home craft. So thanks for having a chance to interview us today.
Sure. Jeff Kordulak is Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Connecticut. We're going to go in and start meeting a bunch of the exciting people. Thank you. Exciting people here at the NOFA Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University. Steve, thanks. Jeff, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Well, we're here at the NOFA Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University. We're talking to a lot of great people, but we haven't really talked a lot about animals yet. So that brought me over here to visit with Katie Yanchuk. She is the Northeast Farmer Outreach Coordinator for the Animal Welfare Approved Certification Process. Big mouthful, but it's all good for the animals, right, Katie? Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this organization.
Thanks so much. So Animal Welfare Approved was a program founded in 2006 as a market-based solution for the growing consumer demand for meat, dairy, and eggs coming from animals that are raised in a high-welfare environment.
Okay.
So our program, AWA, certifies, supports, and promotes farmers that raise their animals with the highest animal welfare standards outdoors, on pasture, and range.
So these are still animals that are eventually being raised for some sort of market use?
That's correct. So the farms in our program are raising animals for meat, dairy, eggs, and fiber products.
So tell me a little bit about why this whole initiative got started. Was it because of, as you mentioned, a higher demand and sort of the whole idea of knowing exactly where what you're putting in your mouth is coming from?
I definitely think so. We've seen that there's more interest from consumers than ever before in where their food is coming from. Not only the healthfulness of the product, but the sustainability of the farm that it's coming from and how the animals are cared for has become absolutely important to consumers nowadays.
Okay.
So that's kind of where Animal Welfare Proof comes in.
Okay. Have you actually gone out and visited or worked on or observed some of these farms that are certified under your system?
Every farm in the AWA program has been audited. We actually go to the farm and audit to make sure that all of our standards are being met.
Okay. So in what capacity do you interact with the purveyors who are seeking to and then maintaining certification?
So I personally help the producers, the farmers in our program, with their marketing. That's sort of my role at AWA.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually offer a lot of marketing assistance, whether it's writing a farm profile or a press release, distributing information for them, announcements, that sort of thing. We also visit their farm and help plan events. We promote them through our social media on Twitter and Facebook. And then we even have different labeling support and technical advice that we can offer to our farmers. Lots of services, all for free.
So how does your organization sustain itself with all of these no-cost services?
We are actually very lucky to be funded by donation. We're a nonprofit, and that's how we keep afloat.
So this is a national organization?
That's right. We actually have farms throughout North America. We're even in Canada. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And are you from Connecticut?
I am not. I'm from Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I'm from a farm family.
I do not come from a farming family, but I have worked on a farm and really enjoyed it.
Okay,
that's
great.
Where I got a lot of my interest.
Excellent. So for people that might be listening, especially as you probably know, Connecticut has this kind of, I wouldn't say explosion, but this real strong uptrend in like these boutique farms. A lot of them feature animals, and I guess historically people have said to me things like, you know, free-range chickens taste better than cage chickens, and you know, there's a lot about the old school type way that we might think of farms that is actually not just good for the animal but good for the products they produce.
I absolutely agree with them. We have seen a lot of the farms in our program winning awards for their products, for the taste of their product. And that's because it's really not a surprise to us that a high welfare product is also a higher quality tasting product. It sort of just goes hand in hand.
I guess there's a lot more demand, too, at the food service level for this type of certification for restaurants and other organizations that are eventually using the finished product.
That's right. So when you're certifying your product, you're basically assuring your customer, whether it's a restaurant or directly to a customer at a farmer's market, you're assuring them that you're doing what you're claiming you're doing, and that's through this certification agency, our animal welfare approved.
Do you have some idea that your organization is sustainable and growing? Are you constantly looking at the inbox more full than the outbox in terms of applicants?
Absolutely. I've been with AWA for a little over 2 years, and in my region, which is the Northeast, I have seen only growth, and I really expect a lot more farms to be joining in the next couple of years. There's, like I said, there's that consumer demand, and that's what really drives it. That's why farmers come to us, because they want to be able to show that label to their customers.
So what types of farmers might take advantage of your services?
So farmers that are raising their animals outdoors on pasture or range, that's really the focus of our program, and it's what sets us apart. We're the only certification program that is truly pasture-based.
Oh, okay. And how would they get in touch with you, whether they're a purveyor or a farmer, to get more information about membership?
Well, first of all, our website is a great place to start, and that's animalwelfareapproved.org. And that's where all of our standards can be found for a farmer to read through if they're interested in the program. But my name, again, is Katie Yanchuk, and I'm the Northeast Farmer and Market Outreach Coordinator, and they can always email me at Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at animalwelfareapproved.org.
Animal Welfare Approved. Katie, as we heard, being a very informed resource for us here at the award-winning For the People, coming to you from the NOFA Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University. Get in touch with Katie if you're interested in following through with their Animal Welfare Approved certification. Thank you so much, Katie. Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Continuing our jaunt through the winter conference here. It doesn't feel much like winter, though, here in Danbury at Western Connecticut State University. The Northeast Organic Farming Association's winter conference is going on. As you've been hearing, we're talking to all kinds of interesting people, and I was so happy to run across Steve Dinsmore. He is not just the president of the Connecticut Beekeepers Association, celebrating their 125th anniversary this year. He is also a beekeeper and bee expert with Old Ledge Apiaries in East Lyme. So, Steve, we have come to this conference and gone to a number of NOFA and other agricultural meetings talking about bees, especially with the heightened interest in the great bee colony losses that we've been experiencing over the past decade. So I guess the first question I have is, how are things going in the beekeeping industry, as far as you could tell from your position?
Well, as a whole, the losses are still very, very high. We're losing way too many colonies, primarily due to the Varroa mites that are still a problem. Colony collapse disorder has not been too much of an issue here in Connecticut, but we are still experiencing losses anywhere between 30 to 50% depending on whether we have a hard winter or a softer winter.
Mm. So would a winter like we experienced this year with that sort of El Nino effect and very light snow, does that bode better for fortifying the bee population in Connecticut?
Actually, no. It's actually the opposite. Because with the temperatures going up and down, the queens don't shut down as much, the bees don't cluster up as much, and they tend to, the queens don't stop laying. And when you get a cold snap, the bees will want to cluster over the brood and try and keep them warm. And if it isn't a large enough cluster, they'll eat all their food supplies close to the brood nest, and they'll starve when they're surrounded by, you know, boxes of honey around them.
Mm. So the other thing that's been going on over the past few years is this greater awareness about the neonicotinoids,
right.
And even to the extent that several communities in Connecticut are forming awareness projects and trying to do things like inspiring changes in the way that their municipal park departments and maintenance divisions handle things like pest control.
Well, I really think that the biggest thing is people need to be aware of what they're applying and when they're applying it. With honeybees, it's a case of not applying pesticides when flowers are in bloom. For instance, for people who do pollination, they take them in at the start of the blooms and they take them out after the blooms, and the farmers don't spray their trees while our bees are pollinating. For as far as the neonicotinoids go, the science isn't complete as to whether they are or they are not a threat to honeybees. The evidence points to possibly having some issues, but I think overall it's better to err on the side of caution and try and limit the use of neonicotinoids until we get more science and figure out really how they're affecting the bee colonies.
Yeah. I've come to understand that the resistance against curbing the use of fertilizers and other applications that contain them are very much like global commercial farms and fertilizers and pesticides, where you've got generational familiarity, and it's hard to make that kind of cultural change. Never mind trying to, buy into science that may or may not be proven.
Well, farmers have to use pesticides, whether they're organic or whether they're synthetic. They have to be used because there are hardened pests that are going to obliterate the crops that they're trying to grow. So it's a matter of using more pollinator-friendly approved pesticides, mm-hmm. Less harsh chemicals that still kill the target predators of their the product they're trying to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So, like with the bees, we have to use miticides to control the varroa mites that are destroying our bee colonies. But we do that by label. We don't do it when the honey boxes for honey are on to prevent any product contamination. And we have to control the mite populations. You know, people that say, well, I just want to have totally organic bees without pesticides. Well, that's a wonderful sentiment to have, but we don't have totally mite-resistant bees. Mm. And you are going to lose your bees if you don't treat your bees. Mm. And you create a mite bomb that's going to infect your neighbor's bees. So you have to control your mite populations. Mm.
That being said, on the science end, is there any interest in the husbandry aspect of trying to develop the mite resistant honeybees?
Oh, absolutely. We have a organization, the Connecticut Queen Producers Association, which is looking at developing lines of queens that are acclimated to the Connecticut environment, colonies that overwinter, you already have survivorship.
Yep.
And then you can test which colonies have higher mite loads. You use those queens, you use those colonies to raise queens and then requeen your other colonies, and hopefully over time, through selection, you can select for colonies that have greater mite resistance. The problem is that we import too many bees from down south. You have to do it because there just aren't enough locally produced honeybees, yeah. Honeybee resources, yeah. And that dilutes the genetics every time we try and get a leg up.
Mm. So a lot of challenges, also not just on the front line of beekeeping, but also, as you mentioned before we went on the air, from a political standpoint, there is a state official who is trying to, keep a close eye and be a good advocate in Hartford, and I guess as our program and every radio and television news program and newspaper has been mentioning over the past few weeks and months. The situation in Hartford is not pretty, so I guess we're in a situation where Connecticut may be risking losing its state beekeeper, is that it?
It's the state bee inspector.
Oh, okay.
And the state bee inspector is responsible for inspecting bees that are imported into the state of Connecticut, ensuring that they have inspection certificates that verify that they are disease-free before they come into the state. All of our problems, varroa mites included, the small hive beetles, have been imported in packages from down south. That's how they were first introduced. And the state bee inspector is supposed to ensure that we minimize the number of problems that we import.
Okay.
He also provides a resource for new beekeepers, showing them what's going on in their hives, make sure that they don't have problems, and he provides an educational component. He does outreach to schools. If beekeepers do have problems, if there's an outbreak of the bacterial outbreaks of fowl brood, he can isolate those yards and prevent it from spreading around to other yards. He's a resource that we can't live without. He's brought in more in grant money than his salary is. He's starting an initiative to help inner city kids learn about beekeeping.
Okay. So from an economic standpoint, it certainly sounds like regardless of the talent of the individual, that the position has future potential to be self-sustaining from a cost standpoint. So I guess it's just a matter of educating people and getting them in the loop to contact their local representatives, lawmakers and senators here in Connecticut, and asking them to keep an eye on the initiative to eclipse the state bee inspector.
Yes. Well, the money that he brings in are for other programs related to beekeeping, mm-hmm. not really for his own salary.
Right.
He's employed through the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. In the state budget, they're looking at in excess of a $900,000 cut to their budget, which means elimination of a lot of the researchers and PhD positions. And he's not as high on the food chain, but he's just as important,
yeah.
Especially to the beekeeping industry that provides pollination services to all over the state of Connecticut to farmers. And the beekeepers provide millions and millions of dollars in pollination services and increase the yield in crops. Um, just by large amounts.
Yeah, a critical position that hopefully our listeners and readers will hear about on this program and take it under their wing to try to do some advocacy on your behalf. Certainly well deserved. We're celebrating the Connecticut Beekeepers Association's 125th anniversary this year, and we're pleased to have a few minutes to talk with that association's president, Steve Dinsmore of Old Ledge Apiaries in East Lyme, here from the Northeast Organic Farming Association Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University. Steve, great information. Best of luck to you, and thank you.
Well, thank you, and we'd like to invite all your listeners to come to our 125th anniversary celebration June 4th at Lockwood Farm in Hamden, Connecticut. There's going to be exhibitions and displays for everybody. Even if you've never seen bees before, you're welcome to come, and we're going to have a lot going on, activities for kids,
yeah.
The National Honey Queen should be there.
Is there a website or someplace?
CTBees.org will have information. They also have an online petition for preserving the state bee inspector's position.
Oh, good. Excellent. A one-stop shop to get all the important work done. And Hamden, right in the middle of the state, nice and easy to get to from any corner. So we hope folks will come out for that celebration. June 4th, you said?
Yes.
June 4th. Good. Steve Dinsmore from Old Ledge Apiaries and the Connecticut Beekeepers Association. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Vayette. I'm John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People. Or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab at our radio station website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scott's Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.